I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We're the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today. Listen to Rappaport's Reality starting May 8th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
KFI AM 640, you're listening to the John and Ken Show on demand on the iHeartRadio app.
You're not going to get away from it. And, of course, you can hear the show anytime you want. We post up the three-hour show right after 4 o'clock. That's how you can access anything you didn't hear live. But listening live is always fun because you never know what's going to happen. A lot of people are paying attention to that submersible, which was going to go down and take a look at the wreck of the Titanic out there in the Atlantic. 5 people aboard. Do you know that was $250,000 to take that trip?
Would you do that, Ken?
I wouldn't spend $250,000. I would love to see the wreckage of something like the Titanic, but I wouldn't spend $250,000 to do it.
And wouldn't you be afraid? I would forget what just happened on Sunday.
Yeah, it's a little claustrophobic.
Oh, God, no way.
I know. It's very small. That's why they call it a submersible. I think it's only 22 feet long. It's like a large van.
Yeah.
Anyway, they're wealthy people, along with the CEO of the company, and they have not been heard from, and they're running out of obviously, oxygen. There's a lot of complications, too, in rescuing them, and they have to come up. They're bolted from the outside, so they have to open it from the outside to get them out of there. I mean, they do have some emergency supplies of oxygen that they can tap, but we'll talk about all this in about an hour with Alex Stone, ABC News for KFI. We got a lot to get to. We're going to begin the hour by talking about another one of today's big national stories, and that's the son of the president. Hunter Biden, the infamous laptop from 2020. But what we have going on here was the Justice Department was investigating him on tax charges and gun charges. And today it was revealed that there is a case against Hunter Biden, but it doesn't look like much of a punishment. Let's bring on Royal Oaks, ABC News legal analyst, for more details on the story. Royal, welcome back to the John and Ken Show.
Hey, my pleasure, Ken. And yeah, really, it's a kind of a slap on the wrist in the sense that what happened was Hunter Biden allegedly didn't file his tax returns for 2 years, 2017 and 18, even though he made $1.5 million or so and was supposed to pay about $100,000, and he didn't. And so that's just going to result in probation, no jail time. It would have been a misdemeanor either way, so a year for each of the 2 years. And then there was the gun charge that you've alluded to. Back in 2018, when he acknowledges he was hooked on cocaine, he bought a gun. And when you buy a gun, you have to fill out a form that says, I'm not addicted to any illegal substances. And so that was a lie. That could have landed him in prison for 10 years. But as part of the deal, as long as he keeps his nose clean, literally and figuratively, for 2 years, drug free for 2 years, and agree to never again own a gun, the case will be dismissed. So that's the resolution of the tax deal and the gun deal. Of course, no discussion about the more provocative stuff about China and Ukraine and bribery and so on.
In your legal expertise and experience, then, would this seem like a typical outcome for charges like these, or is there some hint of preferential treatment, especially with the gun charge?
Yeah, you know, sometimes people get a little prison time for this kind of situation where they get a gun and they're not supposed to. But basically, unless he's got a rap sheet as long as his arm, there's no way you're going to get something like the 10 years. So I think for the Republicans to try to make hay out of the fact that it's probation only, it might be a tall order. On the other hand, the fact that there's still this open question about the other investigations, and the question is the Biden Department of Justice really going to pursue any possible charges against Joe Biden and Hunter Biden? You know, I think most people know the answer to that, but it's going to be a political football, of course, in the upcoming campaign.
Now, this investigation was started by the Justice Department. How long ago, do you know?
Oh, it's been a few years back. As a matter of fact, it started when Trump was still president. And so there was an assistant U.S. attorney and a U.S. attorney there in Delaware appointed by Trump. And so I think that's one of the ways the Biden administration wanted to send a message that, hey, we're not whitewashing this, we're being fair. They allowed the Trump guy to continue the investigation of Hunter Biden's tax issues and gun issues. But that still leaves the other question about the more provocative stuff, the overseas stuff. And we don't really know the status of that right now. But you can bet that the Republicans in the House, since they run the show in the House of Representatives now, they're going to keep trying to dig into that. You've got Representative Comer, who's head of the Oversight Committee in the House, saying that there's some really intriguing stuff coming out. Basically, the FBI has a file in which an informant says President Biden took a $5 million bribe from a Ukrainian oligarch, the founder of Burisma Holdings, that energy company that Hunter Biden was on the board of, even though he didn't really have any energy in his background. But his dad was vice president at the time. And interesting, Harris poll just came out. 83% of the voters say the FBI should make this informant file public. So far, they have not done that.
And the U.S. attorney on this case, his name is David Weiss, said that the investigation is ongoing, but you think that's just standard boilerplate thing that they say?
Yeah, you know, the reason he said that is because Hunter Biden's lawyer triumphantly issued a statement saying, aha, the investigation is over. Return to your homes, folks. Nothing to see. Hunter has made his peace with the government. And then the U.S. attorney's office fired back, oh, not really. The investigation still is ongoing. And we don't know exactly what they meant by that. It's possible what they meant was that, well, he's got to be drug-free and not own a gun, or else if the next 2 years he violates his probation, then he may go to jail. But probably the tax deal is over and done with, and we don't really know if his comment about the investigation is still ongoing had anything to do with the overseas stuff. We're just going to have to hope that the investigators with the subpoena power can get to the bottom of it.
Yeah, I think the tax case is far more intriguing, even though that was determined to be a misdemeanor. But this income is supposedly from business dealings that he had with Ukraine and China. I mean, I'm looking him up here, an American attorney, a businessman, and an artist. I think a lot of people would say, what does he really do for a living other than being the son of the president and the vice president before that and a senator before that? I mean, honestly, he did go to Yale, but really, how does he make this money?
Absolutely. Inquiring minds want to know. As a matter of fact, Senator Grassley of Iowa has said he's obtained records from the Treasury Department showing potential criminal activity regarding transactions among Hunter Biden, his family, and Ukrainian folks, Russians, Kazakh, Chinese nationals. They said that the Senate investigators found millions of dollars in questionable financial transactions between Hunter and his associates, including the wife of the former mayor of Moscow, as well as individuals with ties to the Chinese Communist Party. Now, this is a huge source of frustration, Ken, for the Republicans, because for years they've been talking about, hey, what about the emails talking about the big guy that's got to be Joe? He's just coming out of being vice president or was still in it. And so he and Biden keeps saying, oh, I never have discussed my son's business dealings at all. And the Republicans haven't been able to nail down violations or lies here. But, you know, more stuff is coming out all the time. And again, you can't underestimate the power of the subpoena. If the House of Representatives wants to go after this stuff, they have a lot of ability to, you know, get into emails and texts and phone calls. So there may be more big disclosures very soon.
You said it was like $1 million in unreported income from those couple of years he didn't report it?
Yeah, $1.5 million is what he allegedly earned in the 2 years, 2017 and 2018. Should have paid about $100,000 in taxes, didn't. But we don't know the answer to your question of, oh, gee, you had a couple of good years there, better than most people. How did Hunter Biden, coming out of his addiction problem, maybe he's selling the artwork that he produces. Nobody knows how he made the money.
Yeah, that's really my question. This guy supposedly is under a drug haze, and I can't figure out any particular talents that he has, yet he's making deals and we're bringing in $1.5 million. How does that make any sense, except for the fact that you are the son of a very powerful politician? That's the only way it makes sense to me.
When you look at some folks who have turned to art, I remember reading that Churchill and Eisenhower and George W. Bush, well into their careers, they decided, hey, it'd be fun to pick up a paintbrush, and you look at what they did, and you think, well, that's not Leonardo da Vinci. Same thing with Hunter Biden. If you've checked out online any of the stuff he's produced, he's not really going to be giving fancy artists a run for their money. But when you have a famous name, that certainly results in a pretty high price for your works of art.
Yeah, curry favor with his powerful father. Royal, thank you very much for that report. I appreciate it.
You bet.
All right. Royal Oaks, ABC News legal analyst, talking about the Hunter Biden case. We've been talking about this for the better part of a year on and off, that there was a grand jury looking into him for both tax evasion and gun charges. And it is strange. The gun charge would have been more serious because obviously you could kill people with a gun you're not supposed to have. But more intriguing, really, is the tax case, because this guy brought in $1.5 million under a tax haze back in 2017 and 2018. For what? For doing what exactly? This man has no known talents, but he makes business deals along with Joe Biden's brother, and they bring in the big guy. I mean, this thing obviously stinks. So obviously this family just using its political position and power to enact deals with companies all around the globe. All right, got more coming up. John and Ken Show, KFI, AM 640. We're live everywhere. It's the iHeartRadio app.
You're listening to John and Ken on demand from KFI AM 640.
But if you can't listen live, pick up the podcast. All right. On demand, coming up after 4 o'clock, we'll post all 3 hours of the John and Ken Show if you can't be with me the entire time. John is on vacation. I'm here with Deborah Markham, the 24-hour KFI News Center. The Moist Line is returning rather quickly because we had a holiday yesterday. Did you work yesterday, Deborah?
I did.
You did.
I did.
I'm always here.
Well, you know, I only have a limited amount of vacation days, so I didn't want to use it up yesterday.
Oh, yeah, because it always seems like you're going to some exotic locale around the globe.
Well, I am, darling, but
I'm going
not
to Turks and Caicos.
I was trying to convince John to do that, so we'll see if he's actually going to go there.
This trip, or are you talking
this
about
one? Yeah. Oh. Well, he's going to other places, but I told him.
Yeah, you can't say.
Exactly. But I told him.
He when he comes back,
yes,
where he was, and then he has some terrible story about traveling or something.
I know.
Like that. So what's your next exotic locale then? You always go to Europe or places.
I'm going to Israel, Jordan, and Egypt.
That is a trip I had on the agenda for this year, but I couldn't pull it together.
Really?
Yeah, I do want to go to those places.
I'm going in October.
Okay. And then I thought about some things happening in Israel, and I thought it might make you nervous, too.
It does, but I try not to think about it. I mean, you know, there's always something going on in Israel, right? So, yeah.
I was looking into the trip, and the trip would have taken me from Jordan then into Israel. And it had like this little warning about crossing the border, because the Israelis don't kid around.
Oh, I know.
If you're going to come in from a country like Jordan, you know, they want to make sure that you are not going to do any harm. So I was like, oh.
Well, right. You have
it
to
was
start
a reminder
with
that part of the world is a little turbulent.
But
that's
Ken,
all.
You have to go from Israel. I'm going from Israel to Jordan, and then Jordan to Egypt, and then Egypt back to
that's probably
LA.
The way to go then,
yes.
Because I don't think they're as strict. It's just Israel's pretty protective.
Yes.
About.
Yes.
It's like when I took a trip years ago, this is before the pandemic, when every time I go to London or a place like that, they're pretty tough there. They sit there, they're very kind, but they ask you a bunch of questions.
Oh, yeah.
To make sure you're not up to any no good, especially a little suspicious news anchor like you.
Oh, I know. I will cause so much harm. But you know where I really want to go after this big trip? I don't know when, but it's on my bucket list for 2024 is the Maldives.
Oh, you know, I've not really looked into going there. Is that a lot of beach sitting?
Yes, Ken. I know you don't like that. That's really all it is. But
I saw this ad for Fiji the other day, and I'm like, you know, I'm sure it's beautiful, but after I lie on the beach for 4 hours, what am I going to do?
Lie on the beach for another 4 hours.
I like to see some things historic. I like to take in a little history of the places of the world that I've always read about in books and heard about in history. I kind of like to do that.
Oh, you know, I know, but I'm
on a beach for a week.
But look where I'm going. I'm going to Israel, Jordan, and Egypt, right?
That's why I picked it. That's really historic.
Oh, I know. I'm really excited.
All right. We got another study out about homeless people. It's almost hard to believe this one because it is the opposite universe from what we tell you here on the John and Ken Show. Not unexpectedly, it comes from the University of California at San Francisco, the Beninoff Homelessness and Housing Initiative. Anyway, apparently the lead researcher was actually asked by Mark Galley. I haven't talked about him in a while, right? He's the chief medical guy for the state of California, the one that John says looks like a space alien. He wanted her to look into homelessness. And if you've heard the headlines on this study today, it comes from, yeah, like I said, the opposite universe. There's supposedly, in California, 171 homeless people. I'm sorry, 171,000 homeless people, right? There's about 58,000 in Los Angeles County. This is allegedly 30%, the California total, of the nation's total. And when you look at this story, they're saying, well, it's very much seniors. It's disproportionately, there's a lot of women. I'm like, that's not what people see. Now, maybe we're only seeing a small percentage of the entire homeless population in the state, but this is the troubled population you've got to get to. Stop painting this picture where, well, it's because they just couldn't afford the rent anymore. And as they got older and their incomes dropped, they got kicked out to the streets. I don't recall the last time I saw like an 80-year-old homeless person. It's been a while. All right. And maybe they're out there and maybe they're in some kind of shelter and getting some kind of help, or maybe they're just living in places I don't see. But when I drive around Southern California, and particularly Los Angeles, the West Side and downtown, I see a lot of younger people and I see a lot of drugs and mental illness wandering about. That's scoffed over in this study. The point of the study was to try to reverse the trend that is saying we've got to do something about the homeless problem because there's violence and mental illness in it. This is just the more sob story. It's women and it's seniors. It's the low-hanging fruit is what they did in this study. And they're also claiming that most of these people fell into homelessness in California. They didn't come here from another state. No matter what you hear about those surveys that were taken a couple of years back, by guys walking around the boardwalk in Venice who said, oh, I'm from Florida. Yeah, I'm from Texas. Yeah, I'm from Minnesota. Yeah, I'm from Michigan. Don't believe that, all right? What you're getting is anecdotal. This was an in-depth study. We talked to thousands of homeless people. We got their experience. But by the way, this is kind of self-reporting. When you interview a homeless person, you're going to get the sob story. Maybe, and it looks like some did admit to drug and alcohol issues. And yes, if you read deep into some of these stories, they admitted that they had drug and alcohol issues and then fell into homelessness. I mean, honestly, so really, they would lead you to believe in this study that all we have to do is build a million homes and we're fine. It's not that simple. But this is another push for housing first. What we believe in is treatment first. Whether you like it or not, as Newsom would say, you got to come off the streets and get some sort of treatment or find yourself another place to live. Because I was thinking about this again when I heard the reports of this study. Most people, and some of them if you were seeing in the numbers that are leaving California, that's how they deal with an issue where they can't afford the housing. They go somewhere where they can afford the housing, whether it's the Inland Empire, if they're living on the West Side or other parts of Los Angeles, they go further east or they go to Nevada or Arizona or Texas or Florida. This is what sane people do. The insane people, the addicted people, these are the ones that just pitch a tent somewhere. And we're supposed to have sympathy because they've been priced out. Is that really what it is when we're talking about the homeless problem that bothers most Californians? And that's the degradation we're seeing on the streets? That's the crime and the mental illness we're seeing on the streets. I don't know what percentage of the 171,000 the people I'm talking about are, but it's out of proportion to the problem. So work on that part, right? These terribly large, dangerous homeless encampments, they're not full of senior citizens. I just don't believe that. But that's what's really troubling society. Do that. A listener sent a pretty good story the other day. Amanda Bynes, the actress, was taken into custody. She has some mental illness problems. LAPD got a call about a woman who was in distress. TMZ learned it is Amanda Bynes. She was taken to a police station where a professional medical unit was standing by to check. Now, why did she get this treatment and not the rest of the mentally ill people walking the streets? Because she's a celebrity? This is the actress that was walking around naked some time back. She's had a history of mental illness problems. But But they took her in. But what about all the other mentally ill vagrants that are walking around? All right, we got more coming up. John and Ken Show, KFI, AM 640. We're live everywhere in the iHeartRadio app.
You're listening to John and Ken on demand.
More Than a Movie is back with season two of the award-winning film podcast, and this time with a lot more movies. I'm your host, Alex Fumero, and each week I'm going to talk to the people behind some of my favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the OG spy kid, Alexa Penavega.
You had Carlo Gugino, who's the coolest mom ever. You had Antonio, who's handsome, amazing, charismatic. And then Carmen and Juni. I felt like a lot of other kids felt like this could be me.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Every episode will feature interviews with the biggest actors, directors, writers, and producers behind your favorite films and tap into the history of Latinos in film. Listen to More Than a Movie as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're talking tea, we're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Here are some examples of what you'll hear from us on Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
This is where we discuss all things reality TV, all things popular culture.
And a little bit of Rappaport's reality, the reality of us.
We're figuring out. And if we had been recording these last 4 or 5 days, it would have been,
the
podcast would have taken a left turn. Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Michael Rappaport, and my wife, Kibi Rappaport, starting May 8th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From KFI AM 640.
We got the Moist Line, which will be back in just 3 days. So we'd like to hear from you. Use the iHeartRadio app, leave a message using the microphone icon, or call this toll-free number, which has got the word moist in it. You see? 1-877-MOIST-86, 1-877-664-7886. We'll give you a lot more detail on what's going on with the submersible that's missing out in the Atlantic as a small group of, well, wealthy people wanted to take a look at the wreck of the Titanic, and they have not been heard from for quite a few hours, and they may have less than a couple of days of oxygen if they're not rescued. So we'll get into that after the news at 3 o'clock. Steve Gregory is going to join me now to talk about this story, which California has about 90,000 police officers, but thousands could be decertified or suspended under a new state law, which might catch a lot of listeners by surprise, Steve, to find out what this is. So you're going to explain it more.
Yeah, this was Senate Bill 2 is how it was presented back when the governor signed it into law in 2021. And this comes on the heels of all of the major push for police reform following the George Floyd incident of 2020.
That's what I figured, right?
Yeah. And so this was one of California is now one of many states that have adopted this sort of new rule that gives the Peace Officer Standards and Training Commissions of each of the states. That stands for POST. And they are the governing agency that certifies police officers or peace officers to do their job.
Right.
And this law now gives a panel within that organization the ability to decertify these officers for serious misconduct, things like rape and assault or killing someone on duty if it was found to be out of policy, for instance. And then there'll be a process in which this panel can hear these cases. But the disturbing part of this, if it's founded, is that the Post Commission in California estimated in its budget that given the current state of complaints right now and the current state of misconduct complaints, that you could get up to $3,500 officers per year could lose their certification in California.
Well, all right. Based on what you just said, I have two questions. The ones that you described, rape, murder, I mean, that should have already been a decertified police officer. Now, the additional ones you're talking about, what could rise to the level of the misconduct that could have them ousted? We're talking about using too much force or something?
Yeah, egregious acts. And that's the thing that now supporters say this is going to be a great tool.
Now, would you have to be convicted in a criminal case?
No,
or would it just
not
have
necessarily.
To be something?
No.
Somebody could file a complaint against you for
Well,
this?
It would have to be a policy violation. And if it's egregious and if it's serious misconduct, doesn't necessarily say criminal conduct, just says serious misconduct.
So you might be suspended for it, but not necessarily removed from the force. And now they could go look at that and say, now we want to remove you.
Right. You could be suspended and or eventually decertified. And if you're decertified, you're no longer a cop. But what they want to do beyond that is to make sure you're never hired again as a cop in California and never hired as a cop anywhere in the United States.
So are the police departments and the ones that you talk to, especially LA and such, they're aware that this might be coming? Do they know what police officers could be on the line here?
Oh, yeah, they know. And right now there's a list already of officers there's a decertification list that includes departments in Redwood City, Sonoma County, San Francisco, San Diego, Kern, and San Bernardino counties.
And these police officers, they're deemed to be dangerous. That would be the decision of this committee or whatever it's called.
Well, dangerous, but more, but I think, I don't know, dangerous, but misconduct. So if it was excessive use of force, if it was assault, if it was perjury, there could even be perjury, any kind of a misconduct that's deemed serious. And this is the thing that a lot of people are concerned about, you know, the police unions and pro-police types. They say this is nothing more than another anti-cop witch hunt because some of the people on this panel include anti-cop activists.
Yeah, and I think they're going to be looking for any reason to downsize police departments would be my guess here.
Yeah.
And the level of conduct may not really rise to what your average person thinks is enough to remove a police officer. And there could be questions maybe about whether or not it was the use of too much force. You know, we've had so many activists who have been on this defund the police movement now for 3 years that this could get out of control in removing officers. Isn't that the concern?
Yeah. And up through the first five months of this year, there were 6,200 reports of serious misconduct from law enforcement agencies. Now, about 40% of those involve some sort of excessive use of force, for instance. Now, given the current, and this is what the post commission determined based on the current set of complaints before them, that they could see easily up to 3,500 officers losing their certification annually when this thing is really in full force. It went into effect January 1st of this year, and this is kind of the first we're hearing about any kind of impact on it because the commission had to do a study, and they had to look at the budget, and they had to look at what was going to happen and what the average complaint is. And this report that came out last week sort of determined that, yeah, we could lose thousands of officers every year under this new law.
So is this going to come all at once, or are they just going to start making their decisions and it's going to come out periodically who's going to be decertified as a police officer?
And that's what they're working on now, Ken. They're actually creating that sort of model on how to do it. And I know other states in the country are doing something similar. So I would imagine, like they do most any new policy or procedure that they have to implement, they're going to seek guidance from other places that are already doing it, or they'll just put, you know, they usually put some sort of a commission or committee together to create the policy and procedure, because this is unprecedented. We've never really had anything like this before. Now, post, in the past, they could decertify somebody, but it had to rise to a very extremely egregious level. But now we're talking about presumably even minor offenses that are deemed serious. And this is, I think the concern is that there's a lot of gray area here.
Well, you and I, we've talked about this before, that police officers actually have a lot of protections. That a lot of information concerning their behavior is considered, what, private information? We can't often get a hold of it?
A lot of it is under, they're protected under the Peace Officer Bill of Rights. And that's created for the reason to protect their identity, their family's identity, that kind of thing, because of the threats against them. But there's also that movement, again, you know, post-2020, there was that big movement, police reform movement, to be more transparent. And some activists out there and some organizations, including the ACLU, they want every piece and detail of information about an officer and everything about them, even including medical. And seeing that's also protected. And as you can imagine, police unions are fighting and pushing back. Now, Governor Newsom has announced that he also wants to do sort of a trailer amendment to this Senate bill, in which the state does not give out information on officers because it's a cost-saving move. It's more for budgetary. He wants to put the onus back on the local police agencies to release information about their officers. And then there are some groups now that are fighting that, saying that that's going to go back to being kind of a secret, because if the local agencies don't want to release information, then they're going to have to take him to court to sue him under the Public Records Request Act.
So how are police departments responding to this? Because they could lose thousands of officers around the state. Huh?
Well, there's not much they can do. I mean, it's law. And unless the California Police Chiefs Association or Sheriff's Association wants to battle it in court and go back and appeal it, that's certainly an option. But right now they have to do much like they have to do with all of the new police reform bills that came out after 2020. They just have to learn to adjust. I mean, they really have to learn to figure it out. And then also, I think there's going to be a huge push to make sure that there's better training, better vetting of employees. There's recruitment's at an all-time low.
I was going to say, isn't recruitment a problem?
Well, it's horrible. It's absolutely horrible. That's why you're seeing cash bonuses, rent relief. You're seeing all kinds of assistance, because 2020 was a really big pivotal point for law enforcement in general.
All right, Steve, thank you very much for that report. All right, Steve Gregory, KFI News, on this new law, which took effect thanks to 2020 and the whole pushback against police after the death of George Floyd in California. It is possible that we may have 3,000 to 3,500 police officers around the state decertified or suspended based on this new state law and this Commission on Peace Officer Standards and Training. It's got a commission that's going to look into this and make decisions on this. As usual, we cycle so badly from the point where it looked like police were getting away with too much to the point now where it's decided police get away with too much and let's get rid of thousands of them. John and Ken Show, KFI AM 640. We're live everywhere. It's the iHeartRadio app.
You're listening to John and Ken on demand from KFI AM 640.
We'll get an update on the missing Titanic submersible. That's the tiny little submarine that's used for tourism. In fact, there's a headline that the CEO of that company, who's among the missing, was told some years ago that this is not a good thing. These things are very dangerous. Submersible experts wrote to OceanGate's missing CEO Stockton Rush in 2018 that the company's experimental approach could lead to catastrophic disaster, which may be what's happening. Some have said they have about a 1% chance of being rescued. It's only 22 feet long, this submersible. Alex Stone, ABC News for KFI, has all the latest on this story, and he will join us after 3 o'clock. We did mention, and Deborah Marks mentioned several times, tomorrow's the first day of summer.
Yes.
And you're already noticing it's a little bit warmer than it's been, sunnier. So we have a brush fire. It's erupted out in Menifee. That's nice. Garbani fire, because it started on Garbani Road. 50 acres, Riverside County is responding. Well, there you go. So as soon as we see more sun and more warmth, here come the fires. All right, well, here's a story that always intrigues people. Are there aliens from space in our presence? And the story I heard about a couple of weeks ago continues to be updated. It involves a Las Vegas family that insists that something crashed in their backyard, and we saw what appeared to be some sort of 8-foot person, although they put that in quotes, and then later they said, but it's not human, with really big eyes. At the same time, police body camera footage in Las Vegas showed that something had fallen from the sky. Could it be? Here is a story that we get on the whole situation with police setting up cameras to keep an eye on this for the family.
They're shiny eyes and they're not human. They're 100% not human.
That 16-year-old Angel heard making that incredible 911 call on May 1st. I spoke with the teen and his father, but they refused to appear on camera. However, Angel has been active on social media, talking in detail about what he claims were large aliens in his backyard that night.
And the only thing I can see in the backyard is a tall creature, probably around 8-10 feet tall.
Creatures that were also said to be spotted by his father and younger brother.
What'd you see?
It was like a big creature.
A big creature?
Yeah, like around 10 feet tall.
But the family is pretty much in hiding now, and they say they're scared and claim there have been serious threats against them for allegedly perpetrating an elaborate hoax.
It's such a fantastic story, the way they talk about it, that it almost like it can't even be made up.
They do have supporters, including a local podcaster who's a former police officer.
Something happened over there. I honestly believe something happened. They saw something. What it was, I wasn't there. I have no idea.
The claims of a UFO, aliens, and military activity all viewed in a different light since Pentagon whistleblower Dave Grush talked exclusively to News Nation, alleging a covert crash retrieval program.
These are retrieving non-human origin technical vehicles, you know, call it spacecraft if you will, non-human, exotic origin vehicles that have either landed or crashed.
But as for the greenish streak in the sky captured on police body cam, the American Meteor Society tells us it was a meteor well over 100 miles north of Las Vegas.
We're certain it was a meteor because of the duration of the event. Most everybody reported that lasted between 2 and 5 seconds, and that's much too fast to be a re-entering satellite or a rocket. So, and the fact that it was seen over such a wide area is a darn good indication that it was a fireball.
I already said what I had to say. If you want to believe it, believe it. I don't care no more.
Nancy Liu, KTLA 5 News.
Now, where did these 8-foot creatures go to with the big eyes? We don't know. These stories continue to pop up. The Las Vegas police said they have no reason to believe this family is engaging in some kind of a hoax. This guy that was mentioned, David Grush, he's a former intelligence official. He's the one that says that what the government does is they get to the scene pretty quickly and they scoop up all the debris and send the whole thing into the darkness so nobody knows what has happened. But the Republicans in the House of Representatives say that the House Oversight Committee will be preparing a hearing on UFOs in the wake of a number of these stories popping up around the country, which they do every single year. And it looks like in this case, the coincidence was, well, the old Las Vegas police on their body cam got that flashing object in the sky, which we now hear is probably a meteor. And then they get this 911 call from this family saying that something landed in our backyard involving 8-foot-tall creatures with big eyes. And that's what sent this story a little further along than it normally does, because it seemed to be backed up with some evidence of something weird going on in the sky. But honestly, you're never going to get rid of these stories, whether or not there's some weird creature showing up or not.
I just wish we knew for sure, Ken.
Yeah, well, is there something else that scares you?
No.
Space aliens coming to
kill us all? No, earthquakes are a real thing, right? Because I've experienced them. The space aliens, I don't know. I can't worry about that.
Oh, good. All right, so we can check something off the list.
Yes, you can, Mr. Shampoo.
The short list of things you do not worry about.
Yes.
All right, coming up next, we'll take a look at this missing submersible. This is this group of 5 people that wanted to take a look at the wreck of the Titanic out there in the Atlantic, and they haven't been heard from in a number of hours, and they may be running out of oxygen. KFI AM 640, live everywhere, the iHeartRadio app. Deborah Mark has the news from the KFI 24-Hour News Center. Hey, you've been listening to the John and Ken Show. You can always hear us live on KFI AM 640, 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. every Monday through Friday, and of course, anytime on demand on the iHeartRadio app.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We're the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right.
Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today. Listen to Rappaport's Reality starting May 8th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.